Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We played, and I was... this was like Mommy Dearest level stuff on my part. Like...
Put it out.
Al Gore, like, sighing when my kid would, like... I'm the worst. I'm really bad. And then, like, my older son, who was 11, didn't speak to me for the last 7 holes.
All been there.
Yeah.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, then. Michael Kornheiser is here, socially distanced at 6 feet across from me and my Uncle Benny's table. We're in the dining room of our house on a day that in Washington, D.C., is alleged to get up to 95 or 96 degrees, which we haven't seen in a long time. In fact, the last 2 days have been beautiful in terms of temperature and lack of humidity, but I guess we have gone from that to summer. We're going to have 3 guests today because a lot of stuff has happened, and it's better to do it that way. And next week, Michael and I will do an actual open, and I will have saved up millions of things to talk about. But we want to bring on David Aldridge first, because David is in the unique position of having grown up watching Wes Unseld play, and when he grew up and became a sports writer at the Washington Post, getting to cover a team in which Wes Unseld was either a coach or a general manager and a fixture in Washington. For those of you outside of Washington, I cannot tell you how giant a figure, literally and figuratively, Wes Unseld is in this particular area. He is the most accomplished, most famous person having to do with basketball here, spending a career here. You know, he may not be... Down the road, he may not be as accomplished as Kevin Durant, and had Len Bias lived, you know, he might not have been as accomplished as the—I mean, we don't know these things. But Wes Unseld won a championship and got to 4 finals, and the team never did either of those things without Wes Unseld. And David, you grew up in D.C. You went to DeMatha. You had—I'm assuming you had to have watched those Bullets teams and rooted for Wes Unseld.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, he was, and this was before Joe Gibbs got to Washington. So, you know, the only athletic success that Washington teams had had would have been George Allen's teams, you know, that got to 1 Super Bowl, but lost and made some playoffs and won a lot of games and certainly turned that franchise around, but nothing, I think, comparable to what Wes Unseld and Elvin Hayes and Bobby Dandridge and those great Bullets teams did in the 70s. They made 4 finals in 8 years. They finally won one in 78, but certainly were one of the dominant teams in the NBA during that decade. I mean, it was the Celtics kind of had rebuilt themselves around Dave Cowens and JoJo White those teams, and were very, very good. They won, I think they won 2, if I remember correctly, in the decade. And the Knicks teams that it won in 69 were still very, very good and had great battles with the Bullets, especially when the Bullets were in Baltimore before they moved to Washington. So throughout that decade, the Bullets had competition, but they were one of the great teams in the league back then. And Wes was the focal point. As you said, it's not close. He was the most important player in the history of that franchise, and certainly the most successful player in the history of that franchise as a player. Did not accomplish those things as a coach or a GM. Some of what was probably his fault, but some of it was not. So, you know, he didn't have that success, but as a player was the guy for that franchise.
We should talk about him a little bit as a player, and Wilbon made this point yesterday on PTI, that if you look at his career scoring average, it's 10.8, and you think, well, how good could he be? Well, you need to understand that he patterned himself. He was a center in the mold of Bill Russell, that defense and positioning were more important than scoring points. He had other people on that team that could score points. There's a reason people are voted into the top 50 players of all time, because they're great and surpassing players. And Wes Unseld was, you know, he was a rock. I mean, physically. physically, the guy was just he's a square. He was just such a rock. And battling all the time against, the Laniers and the Kareems and the Willis Reeds and the Dave Callens, all the time giving away height, but not giving away girth. I mean, tell people how he played. God, he was good.
Well, he was, as you mentioned, he was MVP of the league his rookie year. Right,
and rookie of the year, yeah.
And right. The only other person who did that was a guy we like to call Will Chamberlain.
Right, that's right.
Those were the only two. So he certainly could score as his physical body kind of broke down. He had really bad knees the second half of his career. He could not shoot and score to the level that he did earlier in his career. But you're right, his game was not about scoring. His game was about defense, rebounding, setting those teeth-rattling picks for players that didn't see him. And even when they did see him coming, it didn't matter because he was, as you mentioned, a wall. He was a square. He was Wes was not fat. He wasn't fat. He was just a square. He was a big, strong, incredibly strong guy. And part of what I wrote about yesterday and today was how, when he was growing up, his father worked. He was an oiler, I guess, if anybody remembers what oilers used to do, and worked in construction for International Harvester. And he taught Wes and Wes's brother how to build houses. And they built a lot of houses. And they laid a lot of brick and mortar. And they did a lot of work on their home in terms of yard work, farm work, and throwing a lot of hay bales around, stuff like that. And it's how he got strong. And he was country strong, as we used to say, and was the strongest guy in the league, probably. And that's what he did. He laid wood on you. And back in those days, the game was much more physical, and that was his game. He used to always tell me that he didn't win games in the fourth quarter. He won them in the first quarter, because he would start hitting people in the first quarter. And by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, they were too tired to keep up with him. And so that was his game. And it was a game in which, as you mentioned, he let other guys who could score, and he did the dirty work to help his team win.
He had a relationship. The owner of the Washington NBA franchise now is not the owner then. The owner then was Abe Pollin. And the relationship that Abe Pollin had with Wes Unseld is, and David, I don't think I'm stretching it to say that Abe viewed him as a son and would never let him leave, ever. I mean, those were not days of free agency, but if they were and Wes said, "I want to leave," Abe would have said, no, that's not going to happen. You don't see those sorts of relationships between team owners and players.
No, not anymore, because, the Bullets were one of Abe's primary businesses. It's not like it is now where, these hedge fund guys who were billionaires, this is just a line item in their company.
Yeah.
They don't have that kind of mom and pop relationship that Abe had with not just Wes, but dozens of other employees. I used to always marvel that I could come back 10 years later and see most of the same people that were there 10 years ago, still in their jobs or in slightly different jobs. Abe did not like to fire people. He kept people around a long time, and in all honesty, probably longer than he should have for, considering that the team wasn't very successful for a long stretch of time. Again, after Wes's playing days, they really kind of struggled to be a consistent winning team. But that's how Abe was. And, even through long through different iterations to having that same, I should say, a similar relationship with a guy like Caron Butler toward the end of Abe's life. Caron gets very emotional when he talks about how Abe, gave him a contract that changed his family's life. You know what I mean? And that he had that kind of relationship with people. And it's just how he was as a person. And we all know Abe wasn't perfect, and Abe did a lot of bad, wrong things too. But in the main, he had that kind of relationship, and it was crystallized by his relationship with Wes Unseld, to be sure.
So it is undeniably true that since Wes Unseld has stopped playing, the Wizards have never, or the Bullets or Wizards, have never gotten to the final. Their success rate is marginal. They, you know, every once in a while they've done a little bit, but they never had anywhere near the consistency that they had with Wes Unseld. And he was part of management as coach and GM. I said yesterday on PTI that it made me feel sad because I really admired him as a man. Yeah. It made me feel sad that they didn't have any success when he was either coach or GM. Do you have thoughts on that as to how that happened?
Yeah, I mean, again, it was a combination of things, and I was there, you know, certainly while he was a coach. Directly and indirectly when he was a GM. And I, like I said, I think part of it, you know, Wes, you have to take responsibility. You're the head coach, you're the GM. You have to be responsible for the product on the floor. I thought those teams played extremely hard, and they did a lot of the right things that you have to do to win games, and that's why they were in a lot of games. But the problem was they just didn't have enough talent. Certainly in the 80s going into the 90s, you know, they did not compare to the Celtics teams or the Pistons teams or the Bulls teams or, you know, any of the really dominant teams in the East. You know, their best players were guys like Jeff Malone and Darryl Walker. I mean, and Jeff Malone was an all-star player, but he wasn't an elite player, you know what I mean? So they just, and the guys that they hoped would become elite players were, you know, guys like John Williams, who got hurt and then gained 100 pounds and yep. ate himself out of the league, essentially. You know, they couldn't recover from those kinds of mistakes, and they never were quite bad enough to have the most ping-pong balls and have the chance to get, you know, a Alonzo Mourning or a Shaq or players like that that could have turned things around for them. You know, they always seem to wind up picking sixth or seventh or eighth in the first round. Would they could get, you know, Tom Gugliotta was a good player, but he wasn't a great player by any stretch of the imagination. You know what I mean? So those were the kind of guys that they would get, and they would never pull the trigger on the kind of, you know, real big deal that could get them a dominant young player. So that's on Wes, and that's on management, and he became management, so it was on him, and they had the injuries. But the bottom line is they just weren't talented enough to beat the best teams in the East and you know, become a playoff contending team. I mean, my best team in 5 years was 40-42. That was the high watermark.
Yeah, they had that.
Covering them.
They had one brief moment where they actually were swept by the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan in the playoffs, right. But they played very well, and they had Jorge Murison, who was very difficult to deal with from the other team's standpoint. They had Chris Webber. They had Juwan Howard. They had Rod Strickland. I'm probably mm-hmm. leaving somebody out. But there was reason for optimism, and it was completely right. tubed. Juwan Howard decided he wanted to go to Miami, meaning they forced him in to stay. They gave Abe a mulligan on that. And Webber, mm-hmm. you know, I'm no fan. I'm just not a fan. And it didn't work out. You know, it didn't, and that was the one shining moment, wouldn't you say?
Well, sure. You know, that team was certainly had a lot of potential. Looked like it was going to be, you know, a very, very good team for a lot of years. And again, that's where everybody's got to take some of the blame on that. You know, were Webber and Howard immature back then? Sure, they were. They made mistakes off the court that did not help them. But Abe was also reactionary.
Yes.
And instead of holding on to two very good young players, he traded Chris Webber in a ridiculously bad trade.
He traded young for old and big for small twice.
Exactly. Yeah, and it was just stupid. And instead of, you know, whatever you think of David Falk, I've always said David Falk knows what the number is. And when he tells you this is what it's going to cost you, you should pay him and not drag it out. And they could have signed Juwan Howard for 4 years and $24 million. And they didn't do that. And they let him become a free agent, and he went out and got $105 million from Miami. So instead of doing what you should have done, which is pay the money, you didn't do that, and you lost Juwan Howard too. So that's on Abe, and that's on, you know, John Nash, who was the GM at the time, to not get that done. So those teams, it was, again, a combination of immature players and bad management decisions blew that team up.
So you having grown up here, I mean, I've been here a long time now, over 40 years, but you grew up here your whole life.
Yep.
I'm going to assume that, well, Wes Unseld, higher stature than, say, Gibbs and Jurgensen and Riggins, because those guys won Super Bowls. or you know, what is the order in your mind in Washington sports, the pantheon?
Well, the only reason I don't have Wes on Mount Rushmore in terms of D.C. sports is because, you know, the first big chunk of his career was in Baltimore. You know, mm-hmm. he was in Baltimore from his rookie season through 1972, 73, you know, and that's when he was MVP and he was Rookie of the Year and he was, you know, at his height physically. And on those great teams with Earl Monroe and you know, Gus Johnson and Jack Maron and all those teams, the team that got to the finals in 71. So there's a big chunk of his career where he wasn't here. That's the only reason I don't have him on Mount Rushmore. So for that reason, I would say Gibbs, because Gibbs did his work here in D.C.
Yes.
And he did all of his work in D.C., including the you know, three Super Bowl titles in 10 years with three different quarterbacks and all that that we all know. But certainly as a player, you know, Wes is again, the most consequential player in the history of that franchise. You could certainly put him there with Ovechkin certainly has to be there. I would make the case that Walter Johnson has to be there because his numbers are cartoonishly dominant as a baseball player. I would put Josh Gibson there from the Homestead Grays. I know other people might have other players. You might make a case for Darryl Green, for example, and you could make a case for someone like that, certainly. But, yeah, I mean, Wes is there. He's right there in terms of the biggest players. And as a person, I would say, Tony, just, you know, certainly one of the great people that this city has ever had as a representative and as an athlete and as a person in terms of his honesty and integrity and all of those things that we say are important.
It's totally true. Thank you, David. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
David Aldridge, boys and girls, you can read his work in The Athletic. We'll take a break. Tory Clark will be with us, right, Nigel? Tory Clark next?
Yes, that's right, Tory.
Are you listening?
I am listening.
Did I wake you? Okay.
No.
Tory Clark, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Grammarly ad. Whether you're communicating with your team online or working on a project, Grammarly is the digital writing tool you can always rely on to get your message across clearly and effectively. Grammarly is the digital writing assistant that helps more than 20 million people put their best words forward. Signing up for a Grammarly account is free and gives you real-time spelling and grammar checks as you write. It works where you work so you can communicate with clarity and confidence on every platform. Do you want deeper insights on your writing? Grammarly Premium gives you advanced feedback on tone, word choice, punctuation, and more. I say this when I do this ad. It's an odd ad for me because I know how to write. I made a living as a writer. I was an English major. My son is an English major. He knows how to write. We like to think that we don't need this, but it's always nice to have a backup. It's always nice to have something out there that says, are you sure you want to use that particular word in this particular context? Grammarly Premium helps you write like a pro with advanced real-time feedback. You know, it's interesting, write like a pro. I was working at Newsday when I was not yet married to my wife, and she was in college at CW Post University, and she was taking a journalism course that I told her to take because I said I'd write all the papers. And I wrote all the papers, and a guy from the Long Island Press, a totally inferior newspaper, was the teacher of the course and gave her a C. They gave me a C. I wrote all the papers. I was making a living doing this.
No plus?
So when it says C's, hooked them. So when it says you write like a pro, that guy thought he was a pro. Loser. Level up your writing for work, school, or in personal projects. Premium features include advanced suggestions on grammar, punctuation, sentence structure, and style. It's the perfect writing tool for anyone who wants to stand out with every word. Get 20% off Grammarly Premium when you sign up at grammarly.com/Tony. 20% off Grammarly Premium at grammarly.com/Tony. GRAMMARLY.com/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Melancholy Man. It's from a group called Clothing Optional. The Clothing Optional group came to our attention via Joel Bartlett of Seattle, Washington, whose colleague's son, Dale, is a member of the band of Clothing Optional and is happy to be on the podcast. Although it doesn't sound like he knows us, Nigel. It doesn't sound that way.
Not overly familiar, no.
Right. It's a surf rock band from Everett, Washington. Everett, Washington, I believe, the Washington Post used to own the Everett Herald, which was the newspaper in that town. It's got a disposition favoring optionality in clothing and the enduring crusaders for all that is buoyant. That's a little bit over my head, but I do, when I walk in the neighborhood, I do see a decal on a car that says surf naked, so I guess Clothing Optional has something to do with that. They play in Torrey Clark, and as we always ask Torrey, where are you?
In the beautiful Commonwealth of Virginia.
Okay, and how's everything out there? You're in Riegerland, as we like to call it.
In Riegerland. Wendy Rieger, God bless her, who's quickly reached the place that Patrick from the Little Inn of Washington took a few years to reach, which is about a third of the people in Rappahannock County love her, about a third of them hate her.
So
out there, and our little quarantine family is doing well. It's kind of become the new normal. Everything that's happened the last few days, obviously, has made us think, holy crap, what's going on?
Yeah.
But in terms of working and getting along and Brian and I enjoying this time with our kids, it's going pretty well.
So you wouldn't think that you'd want a pandemic to force you into this circumstance, but now that you're forced into it, it's good.
For us, it's good. For our 20-somethings, not so much, but for us, it's very good.
So I wanted to talk to you about something that I have been doing. This is so self-indulgent. I think people will be happy about that.
Are you painting self-portraits?
No, I'm not doing anything like that. Oh, God, no. No. And I'm not learning how to play the guitar either. No, I'm not. I'm drinking. I'm drinking a lot because I don't go anywhere, which is fine. Do you know the name of a chef, Roberto Dona? Do you know that name?
Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he is a big-time chef. At one point, he was a James Beard Award winner in the Middle Atlantic region. This is if you're involved in cooking, this is an enormous honor, right? I mean, we'd all agree about that.
The biggest.
So he had a bunch of restaurants. Some did well. One was called Galileo, did very, very well for a while. Anyway, my friend Daryl Clark came to me a couple of weeks ago, and we were just talking about food, and he said, by the way, would you be interested at all in signing up for food from Roberto Dona? I said, what do you mean? And he said, he cooks 5 meals a week. There are no substitutions. He cooks what he cooks. Each meal is a self-contained meal. These are usually meals for four, and each comes with a soup, and the soup is for five or six, there's a lot of soup. I have been doing this for a couple of weeks now and intend to do it for a little while longer at least, and giving Michael some of the soups and some of the dishes, right?
Yes.
You've enjoyed these things.
Yeah, the soups are fantastic.
Yeah. And so I'm going over there once a week, and I'm picking up this food. And it's a delight for me, and I find out that this is now how Roberto Dona is making a living. And so Daryl Clark said, he needs to have people do this. He needs to have people sign up. So what I'm saying on the air with Torrey, you couldn't do it, obviously, because you're out in Virginia. But if there are people who seriously from this area, from the Washington, D.C. area.
Well, Torrey could do it and drive in for the pickup.
Yes, who wanted to get involved with this. If you wanted to get involved with this, you should email us. I mean, seriously. And Nigel will look at your emails. I feel so happy to do this. You have to cook the meals. You have to warm them.
You have to follow instructions.
Instructions, which you get, but the food's great. And it's what I'm getting at is it's stuff, and this is sort of what I'm getting to where you are now. It's stuff that I would not normally eat. I don't like eggplant. I hate eggplant. I hate pumpkin. He made a pumpkin soup that was great. He made an eggplant soup that was, you know what I'm saying? I'm doing things that I never would do under these conditions, and I'm enjoying it.
I think that's very true for a lot of people. And we start in every conversation saying, look, this pandemic is not good, obviously, and there are a lot of people
right.
who are suffering tremendously. However, we're doing things that we wouldn't have done otherwise. What aspect of it, though, gives you the joy? Is it the food itself? Is that you're getting it from this famous chef? What is it that you enjoy about it?
I enjoy all of it. I think what I enjoy most is not. It's really good. Okay, it's really good. And again, it's I never would have tasted this. I look,
yes.
you know me
you
pretty
have
well.
Tried it if it weren't for this, yeah, you.
I had quinoa and kale last night. I would normally,
but I would
look down
that.
On everybody who would eat that.
This
and
is
was
not
great.
What you would consider pretentious chef.
No,
food. I think this
no,
is much more rustic family style.
Yes,
and actually, what I think
pea
you,
soup.
What I think you really like is you like the bounty of it, and you like handing it out. You like sharing it, so you make sure you check with Liz. What do you like on this menu? And I think that's what's great. And you look at. You look at this model because he also has a restaurant that's closer to me down by AU called Al Dente. And you just wonder, what are some of these neighborhood restaurants going to look like? And this model could be something that we see more of where you start to have these subscription lists. You see this with farms who are making deliveries where
yes.
you start to say,
yeah.
you can buy into this because there is a it's a substantial cost, but it's keeping you out of the stores and it's,
well,
and it's putting food on your table.
This is sort of the same, you know, as Giant Peapod. I mean, some, you know, it is food. You don't have to go get it. It's not the same as Giant Peapod because this is really, really great. And it's a little bit different. But I mean, you know what I mean, Tori? It's really
yeah,
cool.
And to Michael's point, these restaurants are going to have to come up with new models because
yes.
if when they get to open up again, they're at 25% or even 50% of their previous capacity. Restaurants operate, last time I read something about this, they operated on a 3-4% profit margin before this. So they're not going to survive just on the people coming into the restaurant. So they're going to have to create more opportunities like this. But the reason I asked you what you enjoyed is about a week ago, Phantom Daughter and I were driving back from the going out provisioning, hunting and gathering food for the family.
Right.
And near Sperryville, there's a little place called Hopkins Ordinary, which is a B&B kind of place. And they had opened up their back area, their nice garden area. They had 5 or 6 picnic tables. They have a little brewery there as well. And you could go, and it was very carefully quarantined, sanitized. You could sit at your little table and have a beer. And we drove by, and we saw a few people there, and we got very excited at seeing other people. And
right.
so we agreed that we were going to go in there and get a beer, not tell anybody else in the family that we had stopped. And we sat there under a tree and had a beer, and I just had so much fun just looking around and seeing other people. And they were 10, 15 feet away, and you'd kind of wave and lift your glass. And we got so much joy out of just seeing other people because it's pretty much been the 7 or 8 of us for 3
yeah.
months now.
So, I mean, my sense is, what did I really like to do in my life? One of the things I really liked to do was go out to eat at a restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be the last thing I do. I'm sorry. I don't want to be. I don't want to sit down and be served with someone by someone wearing a mask and gloves. I'd rather.
Right.
I'm now. You know, I'm not cooking this food myself. Carol and I are heating this food ourselves with very specific instructions. And I feel like I did about Blue Apron that I really sort of enjoy it. I mean, I have a part in it and then I get to have it. And I don't want to go to a restaurant. I know a lot of people, what I want to do is be able to go back to the gym at Columbia and work with Helen, but I don't know if that's coming around either. I don't know.
That
I just don't know.
Back. You could, cause I know you're such a big Zoomer. You could do some restaurants are doing Zoom dinner party. So you and say 5 or 6 of your friends all decide Thursday night we're going to have a Zoom dinner party, and the restaurant sends the pre-packaged, pre-prepared food to each of the homes, and then you prepare it and you eat together via Zoom, because nothing could be more attractive than watching people shove food in their faces on Zoom.
Zoom is creepy. I'm sorry, it's just creepy for me. I don't like it. But what you're getting to is yeah, restaurants are going to have to change. They're going to have to mutate into something different. They are. A lot of things are.
Yeah, it's almost more, it's getting more into, not more, but as much about entertainment and providing people with these opportunities than being a restaurant, as we've always thought of them as restaurants. Because they just can't come back and think they've survived the way they did before the pandemic.
Can I ask you a political question based on everything you did for your life's work for a while, working in the Republican Party?
Of course.
Yes.
Are the locusts coming next to our political world? Yes, they are.
It feels like we're fraying. It feels bad. Maybe that's just a function of my age. What happened to people who stood up on principle in the Republican Party? What happened to them?
John McCain was probably the last one, and he's dead last time I checked.
Right.
You know, they've been gone for a long time. They've been gone for a long time. They're, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I sound like an old person when I say this, but I think a lot of people up there today would agree. 15, 20 years ago, you'd say, okay, who are the profiles in Courage? And people would whip off 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 names, right? You cannot do that now. You can't do it now. You just can't. And especially with everything going on in the last week after George Floyd, this is different. I realize we've seen the movie before. David Aldridge and Mark Stern and I talked about this the other night. We've seen this movie before, talking specifically about police killing a black man. And we've seen the protests, and we've seen the outrage. And we've seen that we have to change. But this is different. And it's reached a level and a depth and a diversity, I use that word specifically, of outrage that we haven't seen before. And so as sad as it is, there is a part of me, because I'm always the eternal optimist, there's a part of me that says, maybe this time will be different. And maybe this time people really will take action, and the action, to your original question, that I think can be most practical and most meaningful and most helpful in the next few months is getting off your happy you-know-whats and voting this fall. That can make a difference. That can make a real difference. And so I hope something positive comes of this. But I really, really, I fear what might happen after the elections this fall. If a certain person is reelected, I think it's a serious world of hurt. Because not only will you not have profiles of courage wanting to seek public office, you're not going to have anybody who wants to seek office other than people who have nothing better to do. So I worry. I'm hopeful, but I worry.
That's fair to be hopeful and worry at the same time. That's where every day we do PTI and Wilbon and I are in that position. You know, you hope things start back up, and but you just worry about what's really going to happen. All right. Thank you so much for being on. It's always a treat for me.
All right, guys. Good to hear your voices. Michael, I owe you a phone call.
You'll return my text.
All right. Love you guys. Bye.
Tori Clark, boys and girls, we will come back with Tim Kirkchian, who will explain what's happening in baseball. It mutates every single day as another new plan is leaked. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Do you guys know a thing about June gloom? Well, if you don't, you're going to feel it this afternoon when the heat and humidity finally
96.
Returns to D.C. Is this said simply because it rhymes? That's ridiculous. What could possibly be gloomy about Junie? Well, it's Walker's birthday month. There's nothing gloomy about that. The sun is out. Birds are chirping. You'll probably get tan walking to your mailbox where, if you're lucky, you'll find incredibly soft undies from MeUndies. How do we get there? Just wait. And here's where they want me to motivate your audience with a bolded statement. Why would the convenience of receiving undies in your mailbox be beneficial to you personally? I'll be honest. We're in a one-in, one-out situation, so I'm looking forward to that package when it arrives. And young Walkman now understands the wonder of a package, and anytime he sees something left on the front porch,
he's happy.
He immediately thinks it's for him, and then he follows up every couple hours. Where's my package? So anyway, back to discovering those undies in your mailbox while June's non-gloom sunshine is bronzing your shoulders. At this point, the situation is hypothetical, but we're going to tell you how to make it real. MeUndies has this brilliant thing called an undies membership. They'll let anyone in. Where every month the softest undies appear at your door. The convenience factor is clutch. You never have to leave the house, and frankly, not leaving my house much anyway. And you also get site-wide savings, early access, and free shipping. Early access for underpants. What a world.
Tremendous.
It's pure joy, because when undies greet you in your mailbox, June gloom is doomed. Just wait till July. MeUndies are made from micromodal, an incredibly soft, sustainable fabric that encases, that does what it does. It's magically made from trees, another reason to give them a hug. MeUndies are offered in a range of sizes from extra small to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for dad's listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. You got to give this super softness a try, especially because they have 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off your first order, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. That's MeUndies.com/Tony K.
Wonderful, Reed.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Sean Paul in Omaha, who used to work with a band called Eric from Outer Space and is now working with a band, a new band called the Sunks, S-U-N-K-S, not the Skunks, but the Sunks. And the song is entitled Dear Judy. Are we playing the song and I just don't hear it?
There is.
Okay, good. It's always nice to hear the music. It's always
you
nice.
Couldn't
to...
hear that?
No, I was talking over it, I guess, and it was muted in my ear.
Tinnitus.
Tinnitus, I've got that, yeah. Or tinnitus, whatever. But it comes and goes, as we know. And I'm not worried about it.
Just watch your sodium.
Yeah. So if you want to send us your original music, how do you do it, Michael?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonycornheiser.com.
And a reminder at the end of the podcast, or you can just stop with us right now and go straight to the end, and you can hear the songs in their entirety. Tim Kirkjian joins us now. It's a pleasure for me to have Tim and to ask him. I should say, Tracy Roberts and I are dear friends, and Tim and Tracy Roberts are dear friends. So I'm trying to coordinate a dinner situation where we can use this great food from Roberto Dona. So we have to do that. But that's my plug to bring Tim over for dinner. Every single day, a new baseball plan is leaked to somebody. And so when you talk about it the first day, you rest assured that the second day there's a new plan. Today is a Wednesday. We talked about a plan yesterday. Is that plan still out there, or is there already a new plan?
Well, Tony, I don't often do this, but I need to talk about Wes Unseld if you ask me. I have.
We had David on. We had Aldridge. Go ahead, please do.
I listened to you yesterday. You guys were great, okay? But that was my wheelhouse growing up. I went to a basketball camp. He came to the camp. He threw a ball off the backboard, caught it in midair, and before he hit the ground, he threw a two-handed pass over his head that hit the backboard on the other end of the court. The greatest outlet passer ever, one of the most underrated players ever. And Kevin Lockery, who was a guard on that team, was once asked when he stops running on the fast break, knowing Wes can't get it to him. And he said, when I reach the other end line, because any other moment the ball just might appear like a howitzer. That's how great that outlet pass was. And to be as dominant as he was at 6'7½, the greatest basketball player ever to play in Washington, D.C., I just have to say that. I'm sorry. I rarely do these things.
No, you know, there was a statistic that we were told yesterday, and I don't know that we got it into the show, that he has more rebounds than anyone in basketball history under 6'8".
Yes, he was, and he played at a time, and you pointed this out beautifully yesterday, where he's guarding huge men, because he was so unbelievably strong and had the biggest butt you've ever seen and knew how to use that big butt and those giant legs and that incredible strength, I just hope everyone understands who we lost this week, because he was that great.
So let's go back. How old were you at this camp?
Well, I was about 12 years old. And
I'm just going to guess that at this camp, you were not then 6 feet tall, right? Just a guess.
Well, at that time, I was about 4 feet tall. But the point is, as a teenager, that's was my wheelhouse for really watching basketball when the Bullets were really good and he was in the middle of it. And he came to the camp and showed everyone how to make an outlet pass among a million other things. And it was just breathtaking to watch.
So you must have been at that point in time, and we all have a memory like this. Wesley Unseld must have been the largest human being you had ever been in contact with.
Of course. And again, 6'7½ and whatever, 200, closer to 300.
Sure.
He was just so big and so wide and understood what leverage was all about, which is so important to rebounding, especially in the NBA. And he understood all of that. He set the meanest, hardest screens of all time. He was such a great defensive player to be able to guard Kareem and Wilt Chamberlain and these guys who were 5-6 inches taller than him, and he was able to do it because of his knowledge and his understanding of what leverage meant in the lane.
Yeah, he was a great, 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 great player. And thank you for that reminiscence. Can I now get just back to the baseball? The baseball plan. Is it still are we still what it seemed to me was we were at the stage of finding a number of games that the rest of it, it seemed like they could make a little progress on the rest of it. Or am I wrong?
Yes. No, you're right. And this one, this latest idea from the owners hasn't been soundly rejected yet, which is a good sign because it's only been a couple of days, but it hasn't been rejected yet. And this is what I think, and I'm guessing, Tony, after people I'm talking to, that we're going to play a 60-game season, which I said a couple of weeks ago when a source told me, look, the owners want to play 60 games. That's the best they're going to be able to get. They're going to get an extended postseason. That's where they make all their money. And with only 60 games, they don't have to pay the players as much. This is how it's going to work. That was 2 weeks ago I was told that. And it looks like that's where we're headed at this point. Now, of course, the union has to agree with this. And everything has to go along smoothly from here, which never happens. But this has given me at least a little bit of hope that we might have a season truncated and all.
It's interesting that the owners went back to the deal they signed in March, which was a prorated salary for every game that is played, which the union really wanted. But on the other end, what they're saying is, yeah, but we're not going to play that many games, so you're not going to get that much money. You're going to get half, but you're not going to get that much. I figured it would be bargained up to about, well, if you play in your league, if leagues still exist, you have 14 other teams in your league. If you play them all five times, that's 70 games, right? That's 70 right there. And if you'd say give one more game to each team in your division, that's 74. I thought it would fall out around 70 to 75, but you're right there at 60.
Yeah, and again, Tony, it could be 75. It could be 55. It could be 60. It's just not going to be 114.
Not 100. No, it's not.
And at this point, I don't think it's going to be 82 either. But I know the owners and Major League Baseball are essentially saying, look, we agree to something in March that we're going to pay you for every game that we play, and it's going to be prorated, and we're not going to cut you any more than that unless there are no fans in the stands. And now baseball is saying, we are going to pay you for every game that you play, and there will be no second pay cut here. But we will control the number of games that we will play. And that's where the middle ground is going to have to be found.
So the other day when Gary Bettman announced that they were going straight to the playoffs and there were 22 teams and this, that, and the other thing, Gary Bettman made a point. I didn't even know Donald Fehr was still alive and doing this, but he made a point of thanking the NHL Players Association and the NHL players. And it seemed to me actually sincere. I don't see that in baseball. It doesn't, you know what I mean? There seems to be actual hardcore animosity there.
Yeah, and there has been forever, Tony. I mean, I've told you, I covered the 81 strike. Marvin Miller screamed at me a couple times during that because I didn't know what I was doing. Ray Grebe screamed at me once. The rancor was unbelievably high back then, and it wasn't a whole lot better in 94 when we lost the World Series. It's better today, believe me, but it's still not good, and it's never going to be good under the current situation, and that's part of the problem is these two sides need to be in complete collaboration if we're going to save this season. They need to be best friends to save this, and they're not. They're not even close, but it's not as bad as it was in 1981.
So, you know, everybody talks to everybody. I talk to you, I talk to Richard Justice, somebody else talks to Bob Nightingale, somebody talks to Jeff Passan, somebody talks to Kenny Rosenthal, and everybody says the same thing, that, you know, it's not a good working situation, and there's got to be a lot of compromise. And I go, well, are you optimistic or pessimistic? And they always say we're optimistic. Right, you're optimistic. You think there's going to be a season.
I do, Tony, with great hesitation. And again, this is all dependent after they get the finances straight, if they get the finances straight, that the country and local municipalities and the federal government and everyone else is going to allow this to happen. If there's any sort of outbreak again, then there's not going to be a season. But I am mildly optimistic now that we're going to play, because Rob Manfred was there when the World Series was canceled in 1994. He's one of the few guys totally involved in this who understands the damage and the danger of having a work stoppage and a season wiped out. Most of our players have no connection to this. They haven't been a part, thank goodness, of a work stoppage. They don't know what a strike is about. They have nothing to lean on when it comes to that. Whereas in 94, a lot of guys remembered 81 and how bad that was. And in 2002, they remembered 1994, how bad that was. I think Rob Manfred is saying, we're not going to let this happen. The country needs us. We're going to find a way to do this. And I'm mildly optimistic that we are going to find a way.
I'll get you out of here on this, and let's just say it's 60. And let's just say, as we probably believe in our hearts, not just a second wave of the virus, but what is going on now in terms of protests, people will get it, carry it back to where they're from. And I think we're going to see huge spikes in the next 2 to 3 weeks from the opening up of businesses and from the gathering together of so many people. Let's say they try to start. What if they have to shut it down? What if the players say, you know what, it's too risky? And because it would be. It would be really risky.
Right. I think if they shut it down, let's say, we're just guessing here, Tony, let's say they start August 1st, and then there are outbreaks, and on August the 18th, they say, all right, we got to shut down for 2 more weeks. Then you shut down the season, and you just say, sorry, this didn't work. Adam Wainwright, who's a really smart guy, pitcher for the Cardinals, said, if we have to shut it down, we need to just shut down the season. That's why it's absolutely critical that we know where we are when we get started, so we don't have to shut it down, because baseball is not a sport that you can just shut down and start back up 2 weeks later. It doesn't work that way.
So you mentioned August. Is that what you're thinking as a start date, August?
Yeah, I think they're going to start up, again, Tony, I'm guessing. If you're going to play 60 games, you start on August the 1st, you play 30 games in August, 30 in September, extended playoffs in October, and you're done October 31st. That's what I think is going to happen, because they don't want to play past October because they're fearful that the spike is going to return in November and December, and they don't want to be playing when it gets potentially extra dangerous.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we're going to have dinner. We're going to have dinner.
Okay, Tony. Thank you.
Tim Kirkchin, boys and girls. We will take a break. When we come back, we will have email and a new jingle that looks great to me. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
You and he were summer camp attenders. Let me see if I've got this straight. Echo Lark changed to Westmont, remember, back in 92 or 93. Take 17 to 370, baby. Left, right, dirt road, Doyle's, and you've arrived. God knows why I'm still listening, maybe. I'll eat a 20-year-old egg one night. I was looking for anomaly, a sports show. But this camp stuff, I can't get enough. So by all means, you two keep on yakking. Give me a little camp humor talk. Just a little camp humor talk. Share a little camp humor talk.
is brilliant. It's Steve Lipton in Springfield, Virginia, who said, I've been wondering for 25 years which dirt road would get me from 171 to Camp Kiuma. Information for Life. This is talking about me and Feinsander, me and everybody else, and it's the Bruce Springsteen song, Human Touch. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So thrilled about that. That will do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, did somebody say name the Rascals? Okay, sure. Okay, I'll name the Rascals. Eddie Brigati, Felix Cavalieri, Dino Danelli, and Gene Cornish. Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks to our guests today, The Athletic's David Aldridge, ESPN's Tim Kirkjian, and Tori Clark. Thanks as well to our sponsors, Grammarly and MeUndies. And remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. What I liked most about the song was the reference to the 100-year-old egg or 20-year-old egg, because they would take these eggs, hard-boiled eggs, and stick them in formaldehyde, and they turned red on the outside, and you would pick them out and eat them. And I've done that a few times in my life, and it's frightening. Here's a great email from Duska Jensen, the senior winery ambassador, Madam Ambassador at Willamette Valley Vineyards. It was a wonderful surprise hearing from you after you received the care package I sent. I hope you, and she said it arrived to you on May 21st, which is her birthday. I hope you've been enjoying the selection I put together. You know how to reach me when you need replenishment. If any of your fellow listeners are interested in experiencing Willamette Valley Vineyards wines, I will honor a 20% discount for them using the promo code hashtag WVV, Willamette Valley Vineyards, Madam. When ordering online or call me at the winery directly, I'd be happy to make a personalized recommendation. Isn't that great? That's just great. From Madam Ambassador Duska Jensen. That's for everybody. That's a free gift. Well, it's not free, but it's a great discount. Call her up.
Just to talk.
From Jeffrey Toll. Brief note to just say thanks for providing a familiar and welcome presence in my life for many years. I'm a fellow survivor of 7 decades and Long Island native from East Islip on the South Shore, where I grew up delivering the daily paper to the palatial hideaways of various mafia bigwigs. One of my fondest memories is going with my family to the competitions where various town fire departments perform feats of derring do to the delight of onlookers. To this day, I still hear in my mind the PA announcer crying, "On the line, Lindenhurst," then watching the team try to beat their fellow firemen's times. Hearing your familiar accent and phrases brings me great comfort during my seemingly endless incarceration. I don't have an attic like you, so I'll probably end up dying in my man cave. Thank God for comfortable, oversized recliners. From Greg Matushik, Dr. Ron, thank you. I cannot say it any simpler. Thank you for continuing the show from your uncle's table during these tough times. The podcast puts a smile on my face. From Lisa Cohn Dumani in Bethesda, I've been a loyal listener for years, since back in the 90s when you were on local radio. My dad never had sons, so my sister and I were raised as huge sports fans with season tickets to all the local teams. I attended the Bullets Championship in the 70s, celebrated the Redskins in high school, and then attended Northwestern University, where I was a cheerleader and witnessed the infamous 0-11 season of 1989. I lived in France and Switzerland for years before the age of podcasts, and I was thrilled when I moved back to rediscover you. As you can imagine, I especially enjoy Wilbon's Northwestern coverage now that their sports have caught up with their academics. I have an engineering degree from Northwestern. I worked in consulting for many years. After staying home with my 4 kids for 10 years, I launched a successful travel business until the arrival of COVID. I'm writing you today because after spending 3 months bringing stranded travelers home and canceling a full year's worth of vacation, I got my first new request for travel. Knowing that domestic drive distance travel will come back first, I've been spending a lot of time learning about where you can get to easily from the Washington, D.C. area. I was surprised when one of my clients from California reached out for a trip to where else but the Willamette Valley. Before last week, I would have been calling it Willamette and not Willamette, damn it, and I would have had no knowledge of the stunning Pinot Noirs they produce. Thanks to this show, I sold it like a rock star. How good is that? Kenny Land in Jackson, Tennessee. I heard you talking about Dave Spector. Dave Spector is from Bell's Up Winery. Sending you some wine. Is he the same guy with the wild hair who was known for the wall of wine back in the 60s? That's funny. That's a Phil Spector reference that's funny. Robert Sullivan in Falls Church, Virginia. There's an easy way to tell whether you have wood bees or carpenter bees. If you find empty miniature beer cans and pizza boxes strewn around the area, then you have carpenter bees. However, if that were the case, there's no doubt you would have included that in your complaint. Since you did not, we must assume you actually have wood bees. From Tim Logan in St. Petersburg. I don't usually listen to songs at the end of the podcast. However, I was doing yard work and they played through my work. Jessica Mitchell is really good. better than the word you used yesterday when this was a few days ago. I purchased our songs on iTunes, and I'm not a country fan. Thank you for introducing me to something new. From Xavier Le Carrière, I am confident you have seldom received an email from a French person living in Paris. I'm a longtime fan of PTI and of your podcast. As a teacher of English as a second language in college, listening to a doctor of letters talking about sports is a precious source of knowledge for me. I have often had to double check words from What's the Word over the years, my all-time favorite being avuncular, sort of like your uncle. My love for American culture began when my parents booted me on a plane in 1989 to fly to Maine to go to summer camp, though I couldn't speak a word of English. Since then, I've spent 11 glorious summers, both as a camper and a counselor over 3 decades, and watched every Super Bowl, NBA Finals, and World Series. Quite an achievement when you think of the time difference. You and I also share a weakness for wine, but treating you to a good battle here in Paris seems very unlikely, given your legendary fear of flying. Let me know if you ever find the strength or the right amount of pills to make it across the Atlantic. Please give my best to Michael Wilbon, who I affectionately call the Chicago King of Name Dropping. And Necco Wafers are back, right, Nigel?
That's right. We've got several
Sue Meyer of Ponte Vedra Beach in Florida says that the Necco Wafers are back, and she encloses pictures of that. Do I have time to just do one more?
Of course.
Do we have, is the music playing? Because I can no longer hear it because I'm talking loudly.
No, music has stopped, but that's all right. We've got plenty
of time. This is from Richard Leeson or Lesson. I write to ask your help in the Department of Littles Helping Littles. Caterworks, one word, cater with a K and works with an E, belongs to Melissa and Ray Mundy of Augusta, Georgia. You may have seen Melissa featured on ESPN.com in a recent piece by Tonya Malinowski about sports-dependent businesses negatively affected by the pandemic. There she shares that cancellation of Masters Week means the loss of 25% of her annual business. If any Littles in the Augusta area are in need of a catering service in the future, please check out Caterworks. Melissa's the older sister of my best friend. She used to babysit for me and my siblings almost 40 years ago in Frankfurt, Germany. We're all military brats. She's a great person. I know that she and Ray do a tremendous job. The email address for Caterworks is caterworks, and caterworks.com. Wishing you and the crew good health. So that's nice. That sort of closes the box on this, because I started with Tori about Roberto Dona. What you find, and I'm sure this is true for everybody, the more you stay home, not that you don't like your family, because you end up liking your family. You love your family. It's more important if you like your family. But what becomes important if you're not going out a lot? Food in your own home. Food in your own home becomes very important. I've done a lot of grilling. I'm good at that, but I'm no chef. And so to get other food and just enjoy it is really good. I know that sounds sort of one percenter, and I apologize for that, but I'm sitting in this house a lot and I do have to eat. And rather than just have a ham and cheese sandwich, something a little bit, you know, nicer than that has been great. So I hope all of you, that's my wish today, that all of you find good food over the weekend, right? If you're out on your bike tonight, everybody, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah to do it.
Feel right walking in the moonlight. grown tired of waving your flag at night. With every breath I feel like I've been burning in fire. I won't make my bed, darling, that's just what you do. Second chances ringing, and I know doesn't kill you, well, it still makes you bleed. Dear cheaty, the weather says tonight it'll freeze.